is the Bearcast, presented by Bird, Kulchin, Ford. Bird, Kulchin, Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoak and Grayson Grundhaver.
Welcome into the Bearcast on this Tuesday, April the 30th, 2024. We are live on the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube page each Tuesday at 11:15. I'm Craig Smoak, joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver and also Garrett Ross behind the scenes. If you are joining us live or in the chat room, we appreciate you being with us. And if you haven't already, hit that like and subscribe button to the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube channel. If you've already done that before and you're here with us live, then welcome. And for those catching us after the fact on all the various podcast platforms, appreciate you as well. And we've got a lot to unpack in this week's edition of Baylor Athletics news, both in football and basketball. Got a little bit of spring sports as well to get to, but the big story this past weekend, lots of visitors on campus and a few commits coming out of some transfer portal visits. Three, as a matter of fact. Got more attrition coming as well on the football side of things to open up some scholarships. But Grayson, the trifecta of commits, I guess, is where we'll start, because that was the biggest news coming out of the weekend. Linus Noel III out of Louisiana, the defensive lineman from Texas Southern. Also, Jacquez Evans, a edge rusher linebacker type prospect from Western Kentucky. Another Jamar Chaney connection there as he comes over this offseason, joins Dave Aranda's staff, and they've already hit that Western Kentucky roster a couple times now this offseason. So another addition from the Hilltoppers. And then the biggest surprise, I guess, or the kind of strangest addition, because it's an addition that was a subtraction that was an addition at one point in time. Lorando Snacks Johnson had left the program, gone to Arkansas a year ago, played a little bit for the Razorbacks, and now he is back in Waco. I saw another story like this where a player had left and is now coming back to where he started. We saw not quite the same scenario. Dylan Edwards, at one point in time, was committed to Kansas State. Now, he had a couple of other, you know, stops along the way, signed elsewhere, whatever, but he's now circled his way back to Kansas State. Point being, in the transfer portal, don't burn bridges, because you never know when you're going to be back. So Lorando Snacks Johnson now back on the Baylor roster. Three transfer commits over the weekend. Where do you want to start with Noel and Johnson and Jacquez Evans here?
Right. I mean, it was a huge weekend, right? Because these were the three guys they brought in from the transfer portal, and they landed all three of them. So 3 for 3 on the weekend. Great start for Baylor through the transfer portal. Let's just go in order. So Lorando Johnson was actually the first one who committed to Baylor. This was one that I started getting a pretty good feel about right when he entered the portal. Lots of Baylor players were reaching out to him. It just seemed like everything was aligning for him to come back. He scheduled his official visit and then obviously ended up committing. I think the big thing for Lorando was, you know, when he left, you know, he was a guy that I don't think anyone wanted to lose, anyone wanted to leave. But obviously it ends up happening. He goes to Arkansas for a year, and he made 6 starts at cornerback, 5 starts at nickel, and he had experience at Baylor at the star position as well. But he's coming back to Baylor and is going to play cornerback, or at least start off there, is what it seems like. I expect him to probably be this starter alongside Caden Jenkins. Obviously, there's a lot of depth there, but it just seems like that's what Lorando is probably going to fit into for this Baylor team. But I thought it was really interesting. During his time in Fayetteville, he really took steps backwards in kind of all areas. From a defensive grade, he went from 75 to 59.6. Run defense from 62.9 to 49.6. That's probably because he was asked to play nickelback, which I don't think is his best position. And then coverage, he went from 76.2 to 60.6. I think this is a guy that really does need more press coverage opportunities. He needs more one-on-one opportunities, and I think he's going to get that at Baylor at the cornerback spot. This is a guy that's very familiar with the defensive staff and the defensive scheme. I think that's kind of what makes him a very intriguing option, and a guy who could allow other pieces in the cornerback room to move around, potentially move to safety, move to other areas. And for a guy that only has 1 year of eligibility, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, this whole operation seems like it's just sort of built on 1 year, this upcoming season, and then after that, all bets are off in pretty much every way possible. So a one-year addition, especially when you need help in the secondary, and maybe this provides you flexibility if you need to address star. I know that's a big concern of everybody, but just kind of like the pieces can be moved around a little bit easier now with another body in the room to take up some snaps and gobble up some playing time, and somebody that you know you can have some trust in that can go out there and play. It's not another work in progress of like, he's a freshman, and in 3 years he's going to be like, he's like ready to play. Right. So,
and they know a lot about
him. Yeah, he's very familiar.
Yeah. And that's huge, right? When you know what a guy can do, who he can be, what he can do for your specific scheme. I think that's really important and probably the most underrated part of picking up Lorando Johnson. Again, I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, when he left, no one was saying it's the biggest loss ever or whatnot. But, in general, every situation's different. And while he wasn't very good at Arkansas, I think he was put in bad positions there. And that secondary as a whole was not very good, very similar to Baylor's situation at times last year. And so now he comes back. I think he's going to help their depth and, again, allow them to move some pieces around potentially to just get deeper and better in the secondary.
So Lorando Snacks Johnson back in the fold, and great to see. Just the humor hasn't left him as he – you know, said, my bad, I was tripping y'all, basically was the message. And I've seen that a couple times with various transfers, but just a fun delivery and funny in the way that this all works, this whole operation of college football. So, yeah, Lorando Johnson is now back with the Baylor Bears. So that was one of the additions from over the weekend of the three that are now official. I guess the second one was Jacquez Evans out of Western Kentucky. Edge linebacker, how does he fit into the grand scheme of things? And obviously Jamar Chaney, a connection here as he'll reunite as well with Kendrick Simpkins and just get the band back together in some aspects. But what does this mean for another addition, all three of these on the defensive side of the football?
He and Alinus Noel were basically back-to-back. I think he committed maybe 30 minutes before Alinus, so it was cool to see all of these kind of happen rather quickly on Sunday. But yeah, Jacquez Evans, I mean, he's a guy, like you mentioned, the connection with Jamar Chaney. Chaney coached outside linebacker at Western Kentucky, so he was his position coach there. He won't be at Baylor, obviously, because Chaney coaches inside linebackers now. And then also the relationship with Kendrick Simpkins, like you mentioned. This was a guy who entered the portal actually in January, and I felt like had some ties to Baylor, felt like that could maybe potentially be the move. Obviously, he didn't make a decision quite yet. He let his recruitment play out even more, waited till post-spring, and then took a trip to Louisville, then took a trip to Baylor, and ends up committing to the Bears on his visit. I think the biggest thing with him is just proven production. So Baylor's got Garmon Randolph, who I think we all can probably say has had his ups and downs in his career and really hasn't. I don't think he's lived up to the expectations, even though he has had moments where you say, hey, he's a really good player, but statistically has not been dominant by any means. Then they brought in Steve Linton, who is kind of this high-ceiling, low-floor type prospect, a guy who's shown flashes but has been far from consistent during his career. And then you look at Jacquez Evans, who just gives you such a safe floor. He's 6'2", 250 pounds. He had 106 tackles, 13.5 tackles for loss, 8.5 sacks, and 27 quarterback hurries during the 2022 season. He was All-Conference USA first team member during that year. And yes, that was a year ago, so it wasn't last season, but still it shows the kind of ceiling he has. Last year he dealt with injuries, but was still productive. I mean, he only played in five games, and he still ended up with 30 tackles, 12 quarterback hurries, and a sack in five games. So this guy has really shown to be a proven commodity as a pass rusher, a proven commodity as a run stopper as well at times, and just a guy who I think does shore up some of the production concerns at the jack position, a position that's going to be more highly utilized this year as they might play more two jack sets in the peso package and allow more of these edge rushers to get on the field to try to create more pressure on the quarterback, which was something Baylor was absolutely terrible at last year.
Yeah, they had a little to no disruption in terms of pressuring the quarterback or getting to them and creating much havoc at all. So if that can aid there, that'd be great. He'll get hands-on coaching from Dave Aranda, obviously, at the at the spot that he's now going to be filling for the Bears, so that'll be cool. I think just from a defensive perspective, he could go play hands-on with Dave Aranda and practices. That's a pretty neat deal, but also gets the Chaney connection as well, and gets to be around Kendrick Simpkins. And like we said, there's some connections already in place there, but obviously a need for Baylor, getting to the quarterback and the linebacker group. So, yeah, the back level, yeah, the mid-level, and then the up front, also getting addressed this past weekend with Alinus Noel III. He joined 365 Sports on Monday. Really good interview with him, and easy to see why, you know, there were a lot of teams after him. Defensive line, we know, is a premium position in the transfer portal, and this young man had some teams coming after him out of Texas Southern. As I mentioned at the start, I think Louisiana native out of John Curtis High School, Alinus Noel III. They need some big bodies up front, and he's not the biggest, but 300-plus pounds, that's going to certainly help matters, you would think. And how does he now help what they've been trying to construct this offseason?
So I view him as actually the most important addition that they made over the weekend, and that's not really a slight to Jacquez Evans or Lorando Johnson. This is just an area of just major need for Baylor. After Trey Emery and Jarrell Boykins medically retired, it was very clear that nose tackle was going to be a problem for them once again, as you really just had Cooper Lands and Brendan Bett at that position as proven guys who played last year. And Cooper, of course, a little undersized, so you would like to have even more size on the interior. Now, I've seen him listed at 6'2", 320. I've seen him listed at 6'3", 330. So let's just say he's somewhere in there in that range. That gets you much closer to what Baylor had with Apuika and then Bravion Roy in 2019. Bravion was right around 333. Apu, obviously, a major outlier, as he was like 260 or 360 during his time at Baylor. So, again, it gives you more of a stable option at nose tackle, a big body who you feel like can be productive at stopping the run, taking up multiple defenders, which was a key during the 2019 and 2021 seasons. You mentioned the offers NC State, Kentucky, Kansas State, Arkansas, Maryland. I think when a lot of people see the school Texas Southern, I think they kind of question the talent that he was facing, and that's fair. But I think when you see these offers and see the kind of schools that were recruiting him, you can obviously see the kind of impact he could have at Baylor. And while I don't think he's going to be Bravion or Apu, especially during their peak seasons, I do think that he can have a similar impact to, let's say, Bravion in 2018 and Apu in 2022, where they both kind of had down years or not quite as good as their peak years. I think he could have that kind of impact for this roster. I think the biggest number for me when you look at Alinus Noel is hitting 87.5 grade per PFF at stopping the run. That was 14th in the nation. Baylor only had one defense lineman or Jack who was above 70, and that was Cooper Lands at 72.8. So fills a major need up front, allows them to stop the run better, and hopefully that will allow the linebackers to have more opportunities to make plays in the backfield, and hopefully it'll allow them to not leave the safeties out to dry in one-on-one situations as much as they did this past year.
It's a lot of hope, a lot of scotch tape, a lot of toothpicks in some cases. You hope it's all going to be stable by the time the season rolls around, but you got to fill holes, and that's what they successfully did this past weekend on every level of the defense. So a pretty big trifecta of players to have in the fold now after a big weekend of portal visits, and hopefully you were on Sikkim365.com throughout, and you could enjoy those and commiserate on the negatives and then celebrate the positives. And certainly there were a lot of positives this past weekend with all of these commitments, but very fluid situation rosters nowadays. And this was one where there has been some attrition that we'll get to, but these are the type of moves that could only be made with some of that attrition. So it all goes hand in hand there. So a trio of pledges. And without getting into who left now, because I'll get to that in a second, but where does that leave them in terms of their pursuits of guys? And, you know, now you've got these three holes. There's, a couple scholarships available at this point in time. So just kind of what are they eyeing now? What do visits look like? What is all this kind of set up to be moving forward here?
Right. So after the transfer portal losses that we're going to talk about, the attrition, I believe Baylor's at 81 scholarship guys. So you got four spots essentially right now. There could be some more attrition. I'm kind of counting on there being a little more. I don't think you're going to see eight guys leave, but you might have another couple. We'll see on that. But I do think that the biggest thing for Baylor right now is the offensive line. They absolutely have to address that position. I think you could see them take a guard, maybe even a tackle. I think guard has kind of been the focus. And when you look through the offers that they've sent out, that makes sense. I think with Kurt Daneker's injury this past season, with Omar Egbedian being a first time a transfer guy that they brought in from Montana State, but you look at the guys behind them, the depth really isn't great at the guard position. I think they'd like to add somebody to come in and potentially start there, but I could also see them adding a tackle. They've offered Savion Washington, who committed to Syracuse. He could have profiled as a right tackle or a guard. So I think they're probably looking for someone who can maybe swing from tackle to guard and potentially be depth for both. I think that could be very important to the roster. So that's one. And then I think depth on the offensive line, adding another piece just to add a little more stability there is very important. So I think two offensive linemen makes a lot of sense. I think you're probably going to see that this weekend with the visitor list that they put together. Outside of that, a young linebacker, a young wide receiver, maybe another guy in the secondary. I think those type of positions would be the one that I'm looking at when you're kind of trying to construct the roster. They really need younger guys at linebacker and wide receivers. Those positions are getting a lot older. They missed on a couple classes there, lost some transfers in a couple classes at both those positions. So I could see those being addressed. But again, offensive line is the priority right now going forward.
So how many weekends of visits and the portal – I'm sure people have seen the headlines about it closing here in the next 24 hours. And just can you explain all of that for everybody of how many more weekends are you looking at? What's the timeline here? Is it all just free and open for the next several months? Can you kind of lay that out for the people?
The portal closing really doesn't matter when it comes to Baylor's visits and guys, them trying to get guys on campus. I mean, technically, prospects are probably going to want to make their decision in the next couple weeks because you're going to want to enroll at the beginning of June when everyone enrolls. So you got a few weeks, a month roughly in there to make these decisions. So I expect Baylor to have a couple more visit weekends. And then also you could have the random visits, right? Midweek visits and things like that. But the portal does close tonight. Again, I think that's kind of just a rough estimate, as apparently I read a tweet that, guys can still enter. They just have to put their notice in
at this stupid time.
So you could see guys enter who have already entered, but it doesn't get out for a little bit. But in general, I think we pretty much know what the transfer portal looks like right now. And for Baylor, it's just about finding the right fits in the portal and the guys that you want to bring in and prioritize on official visits.
Yeah, college football has actually done something I never thought I could do. It actually makes me appreciate the NFL more. And almost like it more in some cases. I don't yet, and I say yet because if things kind of don't ever change from what they are right now, which they're going to, there's reports last night, a lot of rehashing of kind of the same whispers, but about collective bargaining or revenue sharing and all that. And I know we're heading down that road with college athletics, and the sooner we can get there, the better, to just kind of rein in some of this just nuttiness that at first was very appealing and very fun and very chaotic and very entertaining. And now it's got to the point where it's just like, all right, enough already. Like, get some dadgum law and order in this place and let's know what's going on. And so I think, like, having, I don't know, caps are going to ever work, because then that's a whole employee thing. But having actual real hard deadlines and kind of windows and things, it's so flexible. It almost feels like even that what's in place isn't really enforced in some way. So the portal, you'll hear it's closing, but it's not really closed. It's closed to those who haven't entered it yet, but technically they could still. And so it never ends, basically.
Right, and then you also have grad transfers who can transfer whenever they want after they graduate, which normally happens in May.
Which is why I asked the question, because it's all very confusing. And for folks out there of like, when's the end date? When's this? It's like, it's very fluid. But, yeah, technically, if you're getting in, you need to get in the next 24 hours. I don't think that affects Baylor too much, although it can in terms of, I guess, you know, eyeing open spots on their roster right now. So there's nearly a handful of spots that got opened up over the past few days. By my count, four new entries into the transfer portal off of the current roster. Tony Anyanwu, who was a name that seemingly you heard every offseason and then you didn't really hear much about during the season. I mean, I don't know any other just plain way to put it, but he was a guy with a lot of potential, edge rusher, linebacker type, but just never fully connected on the field. He enters the transfer portal. Hakeem Vance, linebacker, who never really made a mark, he's now in the transfer portal. RJ Martinez, backup quarterback, who competed with Daquan Finn and Sawyer Robertson and was going to be the third-string quarterback. As much as he impressed, especially with this new offense, I mean, this is a Robertson-Finn battle for all intents and purposes. So that doesn't come as a surprise, but they let him compete. He competed. And I wonder if this means that they've made a decision of some sort at quarterback. You would think that at least in some part they have, that he has decided he's going to go find playing time elsewhere. And I always was kind of puzzled when he came to Baylor to begin with because he had plenty of playing time at Northern Arizona, and I didn't really see the pathway here. I just wondered if it was an educational thing or what. I didn't really know. But clearly he wants some playing time now, and that wasn't going to come here in Waco without some injuries. He got that a little bit last year, a tiny bit, but you were banking on injuries to get any more playing time this year, so I don't fault him for entering the portal. But he's in there now, and he was on scholarship. I think there was some clarifying on that on the message boards, but he was on scholarship, I believe. So that does open a spot. And then Bryce Simpson, offensive lineman, they're in need of linemen, but they're also probably in need of some attrition there as well. Just kind of go like, hey, it's not working out here. We can better use this. You can better use your time. Let's go our separate ways. But Bryce Simpson also on the way out. So I think that covers everybody because I think Javon Gibson was over a week ago when we talked about him. So there you go. Anyanwu, Vance, Martinez, and Simpson all in the transfer portal now. And I guess that goes hand-in-hand with what you were already talking about as far as open spots go. So they've basically opened up where they were basically running right on that line. Now they've got, what, three or four spots to play with as a result of these moves.
Right, and I mean, all of these moves are perfectly fine to happen. I think RJ Martinez, based on kind of what I've heard, he got put on scholarship in January, so he never played a year under scholarship or anything like that. I think, you know, he came in, competed, tried to win the job, obviously. It was pretty much Robertson and Finn, despite what, you know, people might have said during camp. It really was between those two the whole time. And now good for RJ. I mean, I think he's going to have an opportunity to go to a, maybe a group of five program and play. I think he's got a really strong arm, and in the right situation, I think he can be pretty successful. So I'm excited to kind of see what he does going forward. You know, Bryce Simpson, tough to see him leave. He was a guy who just really doesn't fit this scheme very well. And I think he came into Baylor with, you know, just he was really heavy when he came in, lost all that weight this offseason, which was nice to see. But again, just not a great fit in the new scheme. And then Tony Anyanwu, I mean, we're talking, what, 4 years, 5 years on campus and just no production at a position that Baylor desperately needed production. And he just was not that guy for this program. And so, again, you're creating room there. You bring in Jacquez Evans. I think they definitely have upgraded the roster over the course of this week.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. It's certainly on paper better than it was because you're replacing lack of production with some level of experience in production. But, you know, time will ultimately tell. But I think it's healthy attrition. RJ Martinez wasn't going to affect you too greatly. And if he was, that means you lost your two top quarterbacks in some form or fashion because he wasn't going to beat them out straight up. And then with Simpson, like you said, doesn't really fit just what they're doing currently. And Anyanwu, again, we've been talking about him for about 4 or 5 years now. So, and it's kind of like it is what it is, you know. You're better off just like, hey, fresh start and see if it works out for you there. And same thing on the Baylor end of let's bring somebody else in at that position and see if they can make a little bit more noise. So those are the latest additions, and that brings – the total to a pretty healthy number. I mean, when you look at it, I don't know, 10-plus guys now out of the in the out portion of the portal, and you brought in, I mean, several guys already, Evans, Johnson, Noel, Linton, Bell, Daneker, Trigg, Jenkins, Igbedian, Finn, Simpkins, Hawkins. I mean, that's a lot of guys. It's a lot of guys. I don't know if this is healthy every year to be 10-plus in, 10-plus out, because that just means that you're missing on a lot every year, and I understand there's various circumstances. Sometimes guys leave because they get an offer somewhere and you got to replace them. It's not always like you made the wrong talent evaluation, but man, that's just a lot of roster movement every year, I guess, that we just have to get used to.
I think when you go 3-9, it makes plenty of sense that you need to replace a lot of the guys on your roster. And I think Baylor going into this year, they could not sit around and wait for more development from guys who haven't shown really much of anything. And so once you start getting into the post-spring portion and you're seeing a bunch of guys who are third string in their third or fourth year on campus, I think in this era of college football, it's time to move on and time to move elsewhere and try to bring in guys who you feel like can be instant starters. I think another part of this is the fact that Baylor has to win this year. Like, there's no doubt about that. They have to get guys who can help them win this year, not in the future.
And I think if you're looking at the list, like, the only guys that, you know, respectfully, but the only guys that you even wince a little bit at is you'd love to have had Drake Dabney back. I don't think there's any doubt.
And Shapen.
And you would have liked to have had the option of having Shapen. Although I still maintain that had you brought him back out, just the fans were going to just revolt. I mean, about bringing the same old thing. It's just that's just one of those where he's actually a better player than given credit for, but it's just everybody needed to just watch somebody else play quarterback for a year, you know?
I think he's the only one that you would sit there and see maybe split decisions on whether it was good or bad. I think ultimately where Baylor has landed, I think you'd say it's a good thing, even though you kind of wish that Baylor had a starter name by now. But then on the flip side, you also mentioned Dabney, and that one's really tough.
And Jake Roberts, I was going to mention as well. And I don't know, that might be he fit with Grimes better, but I mean, I think he'd rather have him than not have him if you had your choice. But I know that they're okay at tight ends. So.
Yeah. Bringing in Trigg helps that, and obviously Kelsey Johnson now.
But everybody else
more.
Is pretty much like you were fine with moving on.
I think the Dabney one hurts more because he ends up at TCU. That's more because you're going to have to play against him. But in general, I think Baylor's done a great job as far as trying to manage these things while, you know, having healthy attrition while bringing in guys that you feel like can play right away. I think they've done it about as well as they could coming off of a season that was so bad.
Yes, they've been very active, so that's like 12 players, I think, now in, and you're looking at about the same on the way out, and obviously there's some more decisions to likely be made. As we pointed out, the whole deadline entry and all that is so foggy. Like, I mean, we'll certainly see some more attrition, but I don't know that we have anything, like, prediction-wise as far as I mean, do guys have to be in by the end of the day or tonight or tomorrow, or is that kind of the deadline and then there won't be any more attrition until later this summer? Or
should be that way.
Yeah.
I would think you're not going to have much more attrition after this wave, to be honest. I think your roster's pretty much set once you get into the summer. I think you kind of need to know where your scholarships are at as you're bringing in your summer enrollees as well from the 2024 class.
So we're kind of up against that wall as far as decision-making goes, but it's obviously been very active up to this point ever since spring ball wrapped, and they've really focused their attention on, you know, further cultivating the roster. It's been busy. So it's kind of where we are. I know you're certainly rooting for more attrition. I don't know where it's going to come from or how quickly it's going to come, but they do have about a handful of scholarships to play with at this point in time. So elsewhere on the development side of things, we got a glimpse at just sort of where the development is as far as putting guys in the pros this past weekend. And it wasn't a good glimpse, and I know some people took it a certain type of way, but the NFL draft came and went, and for the first time in 5 seasons, there was no Baylor player selected in any of the 7 rounds. It's not shocking. It's a little bit surprising, but it's not shocking, and that's because they only had one real hope of a draft pick, and that was Gabe Hall, who was predicted to go as high as like a fifth round, but somewhere fifth and beyond was always sort of where he had been pegged. And as a combine invite and a all-star game guy, you just figured that that was, you know, the type of attention that is normally paid to a guy that is going to end up getting drafted eventually, especially with his measurables and just the athletic ability that still didn't feel like it was fully uncovered in Waco. And that would be the appeal, is that this is a guy who's still got some untapped potential. Then again, it could be viewed as, why did it take him so long and he still hasn't shown all of this potential? Maybe that's a knock on the guy on some people's big boards. But regardless, he goes undrafted. And so Baylor, without a single pick, although they did get a few free agents signed after the draft, and Gabe Hall was one of those, as he is going to end up playing for the Philadelphia Eagles, at least early on in his career, try to make the team. Nothing's guaranteed, but he is getting a shot with Philadelphia, so that was great to see that. Meanwhile, Clark Barrington, who I thought, like, maybe, like, seventh round or something would just get that brand, because, like, in the seventh round, honestly, like, they're throwing darts half the time. I mean, they're being cutesy with picks. Like, let's go draft the guy from Antarctica and just see if he's, you know, he's never played anything but ice hockey, but he's like 7 feet tall. Let's give him a shot, that kind of thing. But Clark Barrington does end up signing an undrafted free agent deal with the Raiders. TJ Franklin also signs an undrafted deal with the Raiders. I didn't think he was going to get drafted, but I did think he'd probably sign an undrafted deal. So that's great to see for TJ that he's at least getting that opportunity. And then Byron Vaughns, which I think just goes back to his athletic attributes that made him an interesting commit for Texas back in the day. He obviously bounced around Utah State, then Baylor, didn't make much of a mark in Waco last year. But he's always been a guy that's had like some intangibles that are interesting. And so he's getting a crack with the Dallas Cowboys. So those four players all signed undrafted free agent deals. I mean, they could be gone in like 2 weeks' time. I mean, this is very, very fluid. This guarantees nothing as far as next season goes. And if anything, the hardest part is going to be, you know, making the team and making this a long-lasting venture. But you got to have the foot in the door. And so 4 feet now in the NFL doorway, but the draft streak is snapped. And I saw a bunch of heavy reaction to this, and I think that it is a sign in some ways of a lack of development. I don't think you can doubt that. You've had one player drafted in the past 2 years. That's not good, but at the same time, there was not high hopes ever going into this draft. I think I said all along that maybe like Gabe Hall and like maybe two guys were maybe going to be selected, so it's not as though this was ever setting up to be a draft where you were going to see a bunch of Baylor talent on display. But, I mean, you look at next year and it's like, who's getting drafted? And, you know, you're going to have Caden Jenkins around long enough to get drafted in a couple years? I mean, so there is that part of this development pipeline when all of a sudden it's like a couple years, 3 years, and, you know, there's not really guys even moving on to the pros. That's a sign in that winning teams get guys drafted and losing teams don't. And so it's just another kind of sign of sort of where they are. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I don't really even look at next year because there's going to be a decision made on a random by the time the draft rolls around next year.
Like, yeah, there will be.
So we're already going to know. So this doesn't break things one way or the other, but it is just another one of those things that are a part of the overall big picture that you're just like, that's not operating the way that it should be. And it's just really not operating at all at the moment. And so that's just another kind of, I think, mark for those who want change and are tired of the status quo, that they another feather in the cap of this is why it's not working. And you can't really disagree with that, but it's also not the end-all be-all. So where do you sit on the NFL draft and the lack of Baylor action the last couple years?
I mean, it's very discouraging. It's not something that anyone was hoping for or wanting, but I mean, it is the reality of when you go 3-9, a lot of times it's a talent issue, and a lot of times, you know, then other times it's coaching issue. I think we clearly kind of found out what it was this year. It was very much a talent issue. I mean, they did not have the talent. When you look at the NFL, they didn't have guys that translated to that. And so this year, I think they've added some pieces that are actually kind of intriguing when you look at the NFL draft. I mean, you need these guys to hit, but I mean, bringing in guys like Michael Trigg and Steve Linton and Jacquez Evans. I mean, you're bringing in guys that I think have more of a shot at making it to the NFL potentially if they have a big year. I think a guy like Byron Vaughns, had he come in and had 10 sacks at Baylor, I think he could have been far more appealing, but he just didn't quite produce. So we'll see if guys can do that and if Baylor can win football games, because if you're able to mix those two things, then a lot of times you're able to have a pretty successful draft class. But this one was not. It's been a consistent trend over the last 2 years that needs to be broken by this Baylor staff and by the Baylor roster. From a developmental standpoint, from a recruiting standpoint, and from a transfer portal standpoint, you got to bring in guys who are talented enough to make it to the next level if you want to be successful in a college football season nowadays.
Yeah, and it is harder to do than ever before because you have to hold on to guys, especially when they start turning a corner and appearing to be good, to the point where people are now not even doing spring games because they're afraid of getting their rosters poached. But that's life. And you saw that it goes hand in hand, NFL draft picks and winning. You look at the top five programs, they were the four playoff teams and then Florida State. Those were the top five most picked programs. And so I don't think that's a coincidence. The four playoff teams and the team that should have been in the playoff, those are the five most highly drafted teams in the draft this past year.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Now, I think you brought up a good point, retention, you know, being able to hang on to the guys who are NFL prospects. I actually think, you know, you can criticize Dave Aranda for a lot of things, but you can't criticize him for that. They've been able to hold on to guys who are very talented, who they have high hopes for, like a Caden Jenkins after a 3-9 season. I mean, that is rather impressive and something that you got to be able to continue to do in this day and age. You're seeing so many top players from teams across the country transferring to other schools to, you know, go to a bigger school or cash in on NIL, and Baylor's been, up to this point, able to avoid that.
Yes, they have, but you know, how long can it keep the dam from bursting if things aren't going well? So this is just another kind of sign of sort of where things are, and it's not quickly fixable, but you have to develop guys, and we'll see how much they're able to develop heading into 2024, but certainly, or 2025, but certainly a not surprising but disappointing showing. Just not seeing anybody get drafted whatsoever. So, yeah, Siaki Ika last year, and then the year prior to that, it was the best draft ever, and that just seems like it's getting further and further away now at this point. The Petrie, Thornton, Woods, Bernard, Ebner, Barnes, I mean, all those guys getting picked in the same draft. That was a fun time, but, yeah, that's now getting further and further in the rear view. So there's where football is. A lot going on. A lot as far as personnel. It's all personnel these days. Everything, personnel, personnel, personnel. So that continues on. Meanwhile, really the same story in basketball. It's all about the transfer portal there as well. And we saw one big Baylor target as they've made the transition now. Alvin Brooks starting to get comfortable in Lexington, Kentucky, seeing him, and still have to kind of double take some of the Kentucky tweets that he's had here recently. Like, oh, yeah, that's right. After so many years on Baylor staff, he is now with the Wildcats, and he's getting quick to work as everybody in the college game is trying to shore up their rosters. And, you know, Baylor obviously getting Jeremy Roach into the fold was a huge deal. We talked about that. But unfortunately, the other domino that they were hoping was going to drop did not drop in their favor, as Jonas Adu, the big man out of Tennessee, thought to be maybe a Baylor lean as of a couple weeks ago, is committed to Arkansas and John Calipari. So he will not be heading to Waco. Instead, it's Fayetteville for Jonas Adu, and he will stay within the SEC. So that is the latest update as far as basketball and their pursuits. But, man, a lot going on there in hoops as well. And so what does that mean to you about Jonas Adu and just sort of where everything kind of stands for men's basketball at the moment?
That was definitely a tough miss, I think, for Baylor. He was a guy who visited Baylor. That was his first trip. And you felt like he could commit right after that visit, but he wanted to take one more trip to Arkansas. North Carolina was desperately trying to get him on a visit as well. They were unsuccessful. So he ends up coming to Arkansas. John Calipari gets a big-name transfer portal prospect, and, you know, that ends up being really big for them. But for Baylor, you're still needing a center to kind of come in and solidify things there. I know, you know, Josh O has shown flashes at times, but I don't know if you can rely on him to be your starting center on a true championship contender. I think you'd prefer him to be your backup, which is obviously, I think, what Baylor is saying as well with the kind of interest that they've put in to the center position up to this point. So big miss for Baylor. I will say, I think Arkansas used a tremendous amount of NIL to land him. And I think for Baylor, you know, if you go all in on a prospect like they did with the Jeremy Roach, and if you go all in on Jonas Adu, it does keep you from being able to do the same thing at various other positions. So now you can kind of spread those things out, and it could potentially make them a contender for more guys, but maybe not the highest-end guys like a Jonas Adu was. I will say a couple other things that did drop this week. Charlotte forward Igor Milicic made it official, committed to Tennessee. I mentioned last week that that's where that was trending. He was going to end up at Tennessee. He made that official. Noah Boyd from the 2024 class, he decommitted from Baylor, I guess, entered the transfer portal, whatever you want to say. For that, he's not going to be at Baylor anymore. He wasn't going to make an impact. He tore his ACL last year, so he was not really going to play, but he was in the plans for the future. Now he's going elsewhere. That opens up a roster spot. And then Miro Little entered the transfer portal as well, the Baylor guard. So he's going to be on the move elsewhere. Florida Atlantic would kind of make sense, I feel like, there with John Jacobs leaving. So he's another name that's moving away from Baylor, which opens up another roster spot for the Bears. So where we're at right now, I think Baylor's going to look for a four to replace Jalen Bridges. They're still on the look for a center, and then I think they can probably take another best available type guy with the NIL that I believe they have available. And there's a few names, a few options on the radar there. I don't know if you want to dive into a few of those.
Go right ahead, yeah.
Okay, so, you know, a few names that entered today that are interesting. Sion James out of Tulane, 6'6 wing type. Pretty good player, shoots the ball pretty well, but physical presence, a good rebounder, an older guy. He just entered today. He averaged 14 points, 5.5 rebounds, 2.7 assists. Again, good wing. I think he just provides stability on the roster if you're able to land him. I don't think he's a direct replacement for Bridges, though. Doesn't have a ton of size at 6'6". New Mexico forward JT Toppin. He's 6'9", averaged 12.5 points, 9.1 rebounds, 1.9 blocks in just 26 minutes as a true freshman. He would make a lot of sense to replace Jalen Bridges. Good rebounder, good size, good defender. Scores pretty well also. A couple other guys, Jalen Wells, forward at Washington State, and Trezarian White, the UNC Wilmington forward as well. Those two guys score the ball well, good length, proven commodities from the three-point line. Guys just are, they're really good scorers. Also, again, fit in with the mold of replacing Jalen Bridges as well. So those four names are names that are definitely on my radar right now. And I think Baylor could probably take two of them and then go look for a center as well. So a good position still, even after missing on, you know, a big-time target like Jonas Adu.
So there you go. The portal fired up for basketball as well, much the way that it is for football, and maybe even more so in basketball right now because there's so much high-level talent that's still kind of letting it be known that they're you know, on the market, and just the amount of teams all striving for the same kind of things. It's like watching everybody scramble for defensive linemen and offensive linemen, except for the pickings are even more slim in basketball because you're only dealing with five positions. So, man, it can get competitive quick trying to land certain guys, as we saw with an Adu, for example.
Yeah, definitely can. And basketball is one of those, you know, it's another animal because you're only you have what, 12 players, you're really spending on eight of them, and then you're really, really spending on three of them, and they can make all the difference in the world for your roster. And so you're seeing that, you know. John Calipari going into Arkansas, he needs to win now, wants to win now, so he made that move as well. One other nugget for basketball, Jeff Goodman reported that Bill Armstrong, Link Academy's high school basketball coach, is kind of being targeted to fill one of those roles. He said he's expected to fill the role for Baylor.
Can we report it when it's official?
Yeah.
I agree. Like, what is the deal with the whole culture of sports reporting now? Is like, let's talk about it when it's not official, And then he'll tweet it again next week. He's already done it like twice already because I think he did it last week.
And then he said both positions are filled, which they are, as you would know if you're a Sikkim 365 premium subscriber. But yes, he decided to go out, jump the gun a little bit because it's probably going to be announced this week, the new additions to the staff.
Right.
So he decided to go ahead and post that. I felt like it was important to mention just because that is very likely going to occur.
I mean, it's pretty much a done deal. Yes. Like it's going to happen barring a comet hitting Earth, that is going to happen. But yeah, like the constant, like, I know something you don't know, and then like it's not official, but here you go, and then like doubling up, and I don't know, I get annoyed at that kind of thing.
So I believe both positions are filled, and then there's a third that's also filled as well. But Armstrong, good to mention, Jacoby Walter was from Link Academy. It's also home to a 2025 five-star guard, Jasper Johnson, as well. So Armstrong could come in, provide a big impact from a recruiting standpoint, but also a very good coach. He coached at LSU in the past, so he's got some history there as well, and I expect the other hires are going to be pretty strong as well. I think Scott Drew's done a nice job of building this staff after losing John Jacobs and Alvin Brooks.
All right, so there's basketball. A lot of moving parts there as Scott Drew tries to make over not only this roster in some ways, but his own coaching staff, thanks to an offseason of departures and good departures. I mean, the type that you want, not the other way around, where you're firing guys because you're not successful. It's the total opposite of that. So, there's a lot in the works and a lot to still finalize, but we pretty much laid it all out there. You know what the staff's going to look like for the most part and the targets that they're after. So a lot more if you're a basketball fan as far as getting into the nitty-gritty of things over on Sikkim365.com. You can get deep with other fanatic basketball fans and get into the weeds on the portal targets and all that kind of stuff and just have a nice back and forth if you're interested in such a thing. Meanwhile, I'm just kind of perusing around the rest of spring. Congratulations to Fee Mulkey and the acrobatics and tumbling team, their ninth national championship, the ninth straight NCATA title. This is a sport, acrobatics and tumbling, that's trying to get NCAA status, and boy, if it ever does, like, Felicia Mulkey will be worth like $20 million a year based on her dominance, but it's another nice feather in the cap for that program and for Baylor, and doesn't get the most attention in the world, but it's always a feel-good sport come springtime, basically like clockwork every year. So congratulations, 2024 NCATA National Championships, nine straight titles for that program. A lot of individual titles coming out of that as well. So big congrats there. Meanwhile, men's tennis getting into the postseason. They will head to their 26th consecutive NCAA tournament, and they will be taking on number 18 San Diego to start things off. The women also getting into the tournament. Both of them will start up on May the 3rd, and the women's tennis team taking on number 31 LSU to start things off in the postseason for them. So both tennis programs here on, what is that? Today's the last day of April, right? So that's Friday. We'll get underway with postseason action.
Yeah, I mean, lots to kind of dive into there, but I think great for the acrobatics and tumbling. I mean, that program is just, it's phenomenal. It's the best program at Baylor from a winning percentage and how dominant they've been. Tennis, very good program. I think they've kind of, I'm not going to say lost some of the shine that they had for, you know, multiple years in there, but still a very good program and a program that I still think has a lot of upside at Baylor. And it's just really trying to, I think, keep up in the Big 12 because the Big 12 is loaded every year for that sport. So good to see them continue this streak, continue to be successful, and hopefully they're able to go on a little bit of a run.
Yes, and then meanwhile, you got baseball, got swept by West Virginia this past weekend, was afraid that might happen. So they go down games 1, 2, and 3 to the Mountaineers. They'll face UT Arlington later on tonight, and then it is a series here at home against TCU this weekend. They got Oklahoma, UCF, still a couple of weekend series to go. So about 3 weeks left in the regular season, and it's been a little bit more of an uphill battle here as of late, now 19-23, and with that sweep, went from 500 in conference play to 9-12 in conference play on a three-game losing streak. So, yeah, that Mountaineer series did not do you any favors. But it's kind of is what it is with this team. I mean, you weren't looking at like big postseason aspirations, but they're also not kind of hanging on to just make the conference tournament here later this upcoming month of May, as tomorrow the calendar flips. But they're right there on that verge of being on that line to make the Big 12 tournament. So that'll get determined here in the next 3 weeks, but could go one way or the other at this point. So yes, baseball goes down, and they will get one of their, you know, last shots ever here in a couple weeks against Oklahoma. But up first, it'll be those Horned Frogs after tonight's game against UTA. Meanwhile, softball, 11-13 in conference play, 28-19 now overall, as they came off of a nice weekend of getting a sweep against the BYU Cougars with a 8-7 win on Thursday, a 12-9 win also on Thursday, and then in five innings, a 10-run rule, 14-4 win over the Cougars. They did that out in Provo, and did that after, you know, a rough loss to Utah earlier in the week. Got beat up by their future conference mate out in Salt Lake City, 9-1. So their Utah swing, successful overall, 3-1. They'll get Houston this upcoming weekend, and that will close out the regular season for the Baylor softball team. So, yeah, there you go with a little diamond action as well.
Softball really needs to get a sweep of Houston. Houston's not very good. That should be a great opportunity for them to move up in the Big 12 standings. We'll see if they're able to get that done. On the Baylor baseball side of things, I mean, really tough to lose to West Virginia like that. But West Virginia is, you know, one of the best teams in the Big 12 this year. And now got to face TCU, got to face Oklahoma, two programs that are looking pretty good. Well, Oklahoma more so than TCU this year. TCU's having a relatively down year. But then you end the season with UCF, which is a program you feel like you should be able to get some wins against at the end of the year. They're going to need every win possible if they're going to make the Big 12 tournament, like you mentioned, and just honestly finish the season on a high note, because right now they've lost five of their last six games, and you really don't want to come out and lose your next three series to end, you know, to end the year. That'd be five in a row if they do, you know, if that does happen.
Yeah, so baseball walking a little bit of a tightrope with 3 weeks to go. Softball a little bit better shape. And right now currently fifth in the conference standings behind Oklahoma, who's back to being Oklahoma. Texas, who's very, very good. Oklahoma State, Kansas, all right there ahead of them. Although Kansas is also 11-13, and they're in a bit of a stinky run right now. They've lost seven straight, so that's a team that you can hop on over. But, yeah, that's where we stand as far as the Diamond Sports go. So getting down to the nitty-gritty there as well, the end of the season here as the month of May gets underway. So that's where I think pretty much everything stands. I think we covered it all, NFL draft, transfer portal in basketball, football, Diamond Sports, tennis, and if we missed anything, then, well, so be it. I think we were pretty thorough, and if we missed anything, maybe it will get covered in the mailbag this week. So we'll go ahead and dive on in to that and see what you guys came up with. Shorty's daddy will start off. Give us a reason to be excited about football season and the future of our program. This feels like dead man walking with Aranda. The only thing that makes me excited for football is when it's over, basketball will start, and Coach Drew stayed here. Please change my mind.
I mean, I guess the only things I can say are, you know, much more exciting offense coming in. I think that will be more fun to watch. I think they're recruiting the transfer portal at a much higher level, and they're allowing, not really allowing, but they're creating more attrition, good attrition on the roster. So clearly some changes there. Dave Aranda's taking over the defense. He's brought in Jake Spavital to coach the offense. Aranda's had great defenses at every single stop he's been at when he has been the defensive coordinator. So you should expect some strides there. And I mean, basically, if the offense and the defense are significantly better than they were a year ago, you're probably looking at a bowl team. And I think based on the coaching and based on the guys they've brought in, that is certainly possible. Now, I also understand, you know, that there are people who have low expectations this year. I also understand that there are signs that maybe this is going to go really bad. I think that's just being realistic. But I also think you can look at some signs and say, okay, there's a chance Baylor could be significantly better in this aspect. Will it be good enough for Baylor to make a bowl game and, you know, overall just keep Aranda's job? We'll see. But I do think there are at least some reasons for a little bit of optimism.
Yeah, I mean, the offseason's for optimism, and they're not changing coaches, so it is what it is. You can either just, you know, dwell in the misery for the next several months or just be open-minded about it. Open-minded doesn't mean you have to be like, yay, I'm Team Miranda, or I want him to get a lifetime contract, but basically I'm not going to sit here and worry and fret in May over, you know, the long-term, like, we got a long way to get to the season. I think they've made some positive moves. I think they've done what they can possibly do in this stretch. Now, none of it's convincing me that they're going to be some great team, but I do think there are reasons for optimism if you choose to look at them that way. I also know there's a crowd that nothing that they do is going to be good enough, and they want Aranda fired no matter what. And so it's just all about perspective. I just think it's too early and just too much energy wasted to sit here and mope right now when there's going to be plenty of time to do that this fall, potentially. And you know what? If you're doing that, then the writing's on the wall and change is coming, and that will kickstart people and they'll get excited for it. But, you know, I can't make people get excited, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It's all about your own perspective. And I'm not sitting here convincing myself that they're going to be great, but I can at least see where the thoughts are in the construction of this roster and what they're trying to do coaching-wise. And it's not enough to drum up excitement because, quite frankly, only winning does that. And when you haven't won for a couple years, all of the – if they were trying to do the rah-rah thing's not going to fly anyway. So at this point, it's just all about results. And you know what? If you want to have a negative perception, that's completely your right. If people want to, you know, think that this is all going to be, you know, great in the long run, that's their right too. I'm just an observer. You know what I mean? So, I understand all of that, all that point of view, but, you kind of got to drum up your own excitement. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
No, but you do. You absolutely do. You got to look for the reasons to be optimistic, but if you only look at the reasons to be pessimistic, you're going to come to a conclusion that is Baylor's going to be really bad. So, I mean, I can understand the reasons to not be excited. I can understand after last year how difficult that was. But I will also say Baylor has, in the past, shown signs of they have a bad year, and then they have usually a decent year the year following, and then sometimes a great year after that. That's been the trend. We'll see if Dave Aranda can, you know, repeat some of that.
Yep, so Shorty's daddy, appreciate the question, and no, didn't answer it exactly, but hey, hopefully there's a lot more positivity, at least over the next few months, and then there will be plenty of time for negativity, depending on how this team plays, or positivity come this fall. Doc Crowell, do you think the transfer portal as it stands currently is enough to push Baylor to be in bowl contention next year? Travis seems to be resolute that Snacks will be playing star. Can you give an explanation why Snacks may work out better there, and then why he may work out better as a true corner? So let's start with, can the transfer portal as it stands currently push Baylor to be in bowl contention? I mean, I think so. It's just six games, and I don't think that's too much to ask. I think the spots that they've addressed for the most part are looking like they could be improved, and there's definitely some more questions, but I think they're in a better spot now as a result of the portal than they were you know, prior to making any moves. So, yeah, I think it can be enough to push them into bowl contention, but I definitely think they're not done working on some of those moves.
Until they land an offensive lineman or two from the transfer portal, I do not believe this is a bowl team. They need to add more depth on the offensive line. I don't think they can survive with the current group that they have and just roll it out there. So I guess my answer would be no. I'm kind of on that 4-5 line right now. But the offensive line is so important because it was so bad last year. I do think if you add two quality offensive linemen, someone could convince me that this team could win 7 games. But they got to add the right ones, and they got to add guys who can provide an impact. But until they do that, I think they're still just short of a bowl team.
So as far as the question on Snacks, can you give an explanation why Snacks may work out better at star and why he may work out better as a true corner?
Okay, so, I mean, he's going to start out at cornerback. That's what he's being recruited for. So there's really not much of a debate, I guess, currently. But if you want to say reasons why it wouldn't work him playing star, I mean, you can simply point to the fact that he's just not a great tackler. That's never been his strong point. And to play star, you got to be able to tackle. And so I think his best attribute is his strength and size on the outside, his ability to play press man coverage at cornerback. I just think it fits a lot better there. And also, I like Carl Williams at star. I like the fact that they brought in Kendrick Simpkins to go play star as well. I think they have two pretty good options there, even if, you know, maybe they're not all conference options this year. I think those guys will do just fine at that position, and I think Snacks will be a nice complement to Caden Jenkins on the outside.
Let's see. Your Master Pierce, MPH, RJ Martinez entered the transfer portal. Is he trying to find a place to get playing time, or was there something else happening? He wasn't on scholarship and likely knew he wasn't starting. Does this move say anything about the viability of the quarterback room? Well, he was on scholarship as of earlier this year. As Grayson said a little while ago, doesn't have an effect on, you know, it wasn't like he was on scholarship last year as well. Like, he just got put on it, so it's not like it's a huge thing that suddenly that's free and he's not here any longer. I think it was just a matter of you got your opportunity to compete in the spring, and whatever your expectations were with that, whatever they told you afterwards, whether that means we're getting an announcement soon on the starting quarterback or if they still carry that over, you are always kind of the odd man out anyways. And so it seems to me that they've let him know that, hey, you're not going to be the guy. And if you want to go look for playing time elsewhere, we certainly understand that. But we'd love to still have you around, I'm sure was the message, because you definitely want him around if you could keep him. But, yeah, it sounds to me like he's been around for a couple years, hasn't been able to crack the lineup save for when they've gotten really injured. And although he's a nice fit in this offense, he's not going to see the field much without some things happening that you don't want to root for. So to me, it's really that simple. And it doesn't really speak to the team or the health or anything like that. But it does open up a scholarship. So I guess that's the good thing. But I don't think it speaks to, you know, a bad quarterback room or anything like that.
No, I think he needs an opportunity to go play somewhere. I also think, you know, maybe it does speak something about the fact that maybe Daquan Finn and Ansara Robertson are locked in, you know, for this season. Because I think if you were going to lose one, then I don't know why RJ would leave. He'd have a chance to be a backup quarterback for a Power 5 program and then potentially be set up to be the starter the next year. So maybe it does add that. A little intrigued to that. That's not me saying anything inside or anything, but that's just me kind of reading.
You better
the
hope
tea
that's the
here.
Case. If not, then they're kind of screwed.
Yeah. You would like to have Finn for this year and then Sawyer for next year. So you'd like both to be locked in. But I think in general, you know, this is a good move for RJ. He needs to go, you know, give himself the best chance to actually play somewhere. But it does hurt Baylor's depth a little bit for this year at quarterback, even though you would hope to not have to play your third string guy.
Yeah, if you're down to your third-string quarterback, they're not really good enough to win with whoever that is. I mean, honestly, you're a fine football team, but if you're playing with your third-stringer, that's just – I mean, things are off the rails. So if it was going to come down to that, you know, I don't think that this is in the grand scheme of things like, oh, my gosh, you're going to fall off a cliff now. I think you're probably already teetering anyways if he's seeing the field. But certainly a very solid player. He can definitely go play a bit more somewhere else. And I think he did all the right things around here, to my knowledge at least. So good luck to RJ Martinez. But yeah, definitely hurts the depth a little bit. So you better hope that Finn and Robertson are on the same page and then Nate Roberts, your third string quarterback. If one of those guys leaves and you are suddenly, whoo, buddy, you're in a bad spot. So let's hope that's not the case. Let's see, BU grad 21, what are the best options for a big man for men's basketball now that Adu has committed to Arkansas?
I mean, the Rutgers transfer, Cliff Omarui, he's probably the best option. But, you know, right now I think Baylor's still kind of evaluating options in the transfer portal for a big. And also I think it's important to mention that the portal, the NFL combine entrance or NBA draft entrance, I mean, were announced today. So I think you're going to see more transfer portal entries, and that's kind of your whole – method behind not taking a bunch of guys early, because you might get the chance to get guys who decide not to declare for the draft. So I do think you could see some more options there, but right now, you know, there aren't that many.
Let's see. It's kind of like trying to get defensive linemen in the portal. It's going to find a big man in basketball.
Yeah.
Easier said than done. Useless Kim degree. When you look at the schedule and assuming we make a bowl this year, what game or games do you think the season will come down to?
Wow.
And I guess let me add this as well. Being optimistic, I see the BYU and Colorado games as the two most likely candidates. If Baylor wins both, I think they become bowl eligible at 6-6. If they split, I think they end up 5-7. And those Colorado and BYU games are the last 2 weeks of September. So you'll have played Tarleton State. That'll be a win. If not, we're not even going to talk about that. Then Utah on the road week 2. Don't feel great about that one. Air Force at home in week 3. So that's where you would be sitting heading into that Colorado BYU stretch. You would think at 2-1. Entirely possible at 1-2. 0-3, Dave Aranda's out of here. Done at 0-3. So then that's not likely to happen. But, yeah, you could be sitting at 2-1 or 3-0 heading into the road trip to Colorado and then a home game against BYU. So do you agree with that, or do you see another stretch that's the more critical spot on the schedule?
Yeah, I mean, I think those two games make a lot of sense. I think when we got asked this maybe a few months ago, I mentioned that BYU game as a game they absolutely had to win. It feels like one that they absolutely can't lose if they want to make a bowl game. It's at home. First home game in conference play. Just a very, very important one. The Colorado game makes a lot of sense, too. You know, I think as you go down further in the schedule, you got to think that Baylor's probably going to be, you know, going into November with a chance to make a bowl game with four games remaining and maybe need to win two of them or maybe need to win one, which has me kind of circling that Houston game as well. Like, I feel like that's a game you absolutely have to win if you want to make a bowl game at the end of the year. Because my anticipation is Baylor will probably have five or six wins going into that game, somewhere around there. I mean, if that's where you're at and you absolutely need to win the Houston game, it kind of makes sense for it to come late in the season. So I think that game matters a lot as well.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it a little bit before as well, and I agree with Kim as far as that BYU-Colorado stretch, because it's too hard to project like down the line too much, because they might need four wins right in the last month. They might need one, so it's hard to say what would be critical at that point, but the little Colorado-BYU stretch is early enough that you're like, okay, this is kind of the fork in the road potentially for them. If they get off to a rough start, they'd have to win these games to keep their head above water. And if they were to lose those, then like you're dead in the water with too rough of a start to the season, because then you turn around and all of a sudden you're going to Ames and to Lubbock and to Morgantown, and you're welcoming in Oak State and TCU. I mean, all these teams that have had your number here recently, that's not going to bode very well. So, they need to come out of that first third of the schedule head above water, and if they can do that, they'll be in a good spot. But yeah, that Colorado and BYU stretch is certainly a critical juncture there, Kim DeGree, to your point. Just a bear in frog world, Kendall recently referred to the current NIL environment as akin to mercenaries for hire. Do you foresee some sort of free agency with guaranteed money and or multi-year deals coming to college sports?
I think that really comes down to whether student athletes are going to be employees. I think once that happens, then yeah, you'll see contracts and things like that. But I think until that happens, I don't think you're going to see it becoming, you know, more like free agency than it is right now.
Yeah, I don't think it can get any crazier than it is right now. I don't know that the employees thing is the route that these colleges want to take. In fact, I think it's the last thing that they want to do. So they're trying to iron out every possible option before that. There was the reporting by Ross Dellinger last night about, you know, potentially some settlements as far as the big house versus NCAA case, which is the one that's got like the billions in back pay on the line. And, you know, there's some talks about how the schools might come to an agreement of, you know, putting basically a cap of you can spend up to $20 million if you want to. It doesn't address NIL. Like, would that be in addition to NIL? But the point being is that there at least are some options that are in front of them that they're working on that could hopefully answer some of these questions. Because like I said earlier in the show, like as fun as it was initially, like it's to the point now where it's just like, it's enough, dude. Like, get some dadgum rules and some law and order in here. It's college football. I know we love it messy. That's why it's cute. That's why it's unique in its own right. But I mean, that's talking about like Pop-Tart Bowl and all that, not talking about just willy-nilly, like players just moving on a whim every semester because they're that sucks for the sport, man. Yeah. It's great for the player. It sucks for the sport. And as much as I root for people, I'm a college football fan. And so I'd like to see a sport that actually has like some rules in place to make it make sense and not just be one big auction block all the time. You know what I mean? So that settlement could be what you're looking for. The schools, again, do not want employees. They may be forced into that eventually. But, yeah, I mean, right now it is basically mercenaries for hire. And it's overdue, and it's all the fault of the NCAA and the schools themselves. So nobody to blame but those looking in the mirror. But I think we're still looking at every option before we get into the guaranteed money and multi-year contract, like pro athlete type of thing that I think you're referring to. Clever username 99. What's your top five Baylor football players of all time?
I mean, I think the obvious ones for me, the top three are RG3, Mike Singletary, Corey Coleman. I think those three are kind of the three that I have locked in. I know older Baylor fans are probably going to bring up names like Santana Dotson, you know, Thomas Everett. You know, there's quite a few guys, Lawrence Elkins. But, you know, in my time, I think those three are the top three. And then after that, since, you know, these are the guys that I got to watch more of, you know, it's guys like Jalen Petrie and James Lynch that come to mind for me. But I also think, you know, Xavien Howard is right in there as well. So there's a lot of names, but those top three are pretty locked in. And then after that, it becomes very much kind of opinionated for me. Like Spencer Drango has a bunch of All-Americans. Does that make him a top five guy? Gary Green was a high draft pick. Does that make him a top guy? But so I like to put those last two as guys that I actually got to see a lot of. So James Lynch, Jalen Petrie.
I go Bernard, Petrie, Coleman, Griffin, and
you got it. That's your five.
That's four. Oh. And then I could just throw any, like, there's 100 names that could fill that fifth spot, but those are the guys that I enjoyed watching the most were Corey Coleman, RG3, Jalen Petrie, and Terrell Bernard. And then, yeah, there's just an abundance of other guys that you could go with there. Bears 224, what letter grade would you give Baylor for their performance in the portal so far? Who should they get in order to increase that letter grade?
Yeah, I'm probably going to give them probably a B minus right now, and maybe even a C plus. Until they get offensive linemen, I can't move that grade higher. That they need more of them. I know they have Omar Egbedian and Kurt Daneker from the portal, but they need more during this, you know, specific portal stretch. So right now, probably I'll say B minus. I guess that's where I'll finish up right there. And again, at offensive linemen, I think you can probably get to like a B plus, maybe an A. We'll see how many more guys they add, how many best player availables they get to take.
Yeah, I'm a tough grader, so it would take a miracle for them to get to the A for me at this point. I mean, if you add another, like, five guys and you get, like, three offensive linemen and something like that, then maybe you could start to approach that. But it would take some huge splashes to get into the A rank at this point. But I think B-minus is fair. They've addressed a lot. They've still got some that obviously need some more addressing, but you know, they've not sat on their hands, that's for sure. They've been very active and proactive at that. So I think that you give them some credit for the work they put in so far, and there's a little bit of a ways to go. So, yeah, B-minus is more than fair right now. Overrated, have you heard any women's basketball portal prospects showing interest in Baylor?
I mean, they added Aaronette Vonleh from Colorado. That was their most recent addition.
Yeah, I meant to mention that, but just got overcrowded with portal updates all over the place.
The 6'3 center, they added her. She averaged 14 points, 5 rebounds, earned all Pac-12 honors. So she's a good player. Adding her, I think, definitely solidifies Baylor down low and makes up for the losses of Asia Blackwell and Drayon Edwards. So, yeah, I think that's a good point to start. I know Scotty B basically answered this question in a long, you know, comment here, so hopefully that helps solidify things. But we don't, you know, you don't get as much information on the women's basketball, you know, transfer portal things as you do on the men's side or football, obviously.
Yeah, it's just not as much of a popular topic, but we'll keep our eyes out for that. And you can read Scotty's post, because if I do, it's going to take us past our time. Yeah. So it's a lengthy post. So if you want to read that in the chat, the Bearcast questions thread, then by all means, and Scotty, we appreciate you, but just don't have the time to go through all of that. But there's certainly some info there on the women's basketball portal, and we'll close it out with this, and we'll update that as it warrants. You know, if there's some news over the next few days, and we'll have that on next week's episode. But do you have time for Travis's question? We got like two minutes here.
Yeah, well, you can ask your
Travis Roeder, this will be a difficult, impossible question to answer off the cuff, but I wonder whether you can think of any good comparison offenses for what this offense will look like. The first one that came to mind for me was 23 Iowa State. Okay offensive line, best receiver is a veteran, small slot. Good athlete quarterback who can scramble and run a bit, but I'm sure there are much better comparisons out there.
Yeah, you know, this is definitely something I think I'll probably answer it off after the podcast, just because I think I want to do some more research on it. I think 2023 Iowa State makes some sense. I don't think that their quarterback is going to quite be as athletic, nor do I think that the offense is going to look the same as that offense. I think Baylor's going to be more spread happy in my eyes. So, I think that's something that I'm going to answer off, and then maybe next week I'll bring up kind of my answer for that. But it is an interesting question to kind of give us a starting point as to, you know, what could Baylor look like going into the season, and what's a good comparison for what they will look like. It's a good question, I think.
Yeah, so be on the lookout for Grayson's, I guess, in full response, I guess, on this thread maybe at a later date.
Yeah, and then we can mention it next week.
Okay. Yeah, I just don't have the time here. We have a pretty hard out each week, so that'll wrap it up for us. And thanks to all those who threw some questions there in the mailbag, and hopefully we answered your question and gave you the time that you were looking for. We certainly do appreciate those who take the time to send those questions in each week. And just to everybody for listening, we thank you as well. If you're watching us live or after the fact on the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube page, please hit that like and subscribe button. We would certainly appreciate that. And same thing over on the 365 Sports page, where you can catch us Monday through Friday from 3 o'clock until 6 o'clock. Myself, Smokey, and Paul Catalina, almost to 40,000 followers over on that site. So definitely help us get over the hump. We'd appreciate that. And anything, Grayson, before we go?
Just be sure to check out Sikkim 365 Premium. All kinds of transfer portal news, football and basketball. We got it all there. So be sure to check that out.
Yeah, definitely a lot of portal talk and both football and basketball. And so if you're a Baylor fan in particular, you can dive right in and have a lot of good eating as far as all the different discussions ongoing there. But that'll do it for us this week. Check us out next Tuesday live at 11:15 on the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube page and all your favorite podcast platforms after the fact as well. For Garrett Ross, and also for Grayson Grunhafer, I'm Craig Smoke, and this has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.